Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us on our Peloton Hall on how to apply for college. My name is Tasha Berner Horvath, and it's an honor to serve as your assembly member for Encinitas Carlsbad, Oceanside Vista, and Camp Pendleton here in the 76th Assembly District. I have to say, when I first took office, I never thought I would be leading during a worldwide pandemic. So obviously, applying for college, going to college, all means something quite different right now. And since the governor declared a state of emergency due to the coronavirus last March, the legislature has voted to support the state's coronavirus response, and we passed a budget that supported our seniors, public education, public health, and emergency response. But before we get started, I want to let everybody know how our Peloton halls work. My guest today will give us an overview of the daunting tests that students and parents undergo when applying for college. You'll hear from our experts about the ins and outs of college application process, how to better prepare for them, and most importantly, how to pay for college education. Our institutions of higher education in the state have their own challenges during this pandemic, and we'll also hopefully feel more prepared at the end of this hour for understanding how and, you know, what different changes and challenges we've had during this pandemic and how that will affect or not affect our admission to college. At a time when so much is unknown, I think today's discussion will not only be informative for high school students and their parents, but all of us who are traversing this new normal. So if you'll hear a lot of tips and advice on how to make this process easier with information coming directly from our experts today. After our discussion, we'll ask any questions that you, our listeners, have submitted via email. To make sure our panel can be heard by everyone, all listeners are placed in the listen-only mode. If you'd like to ask a question, please email assemblymember.bernerhorvath, that's B-O-E-R-N-E-R-H-O-R-V-A-T-H, at assembly.ca.gov. And if your question isn't asked today, we do teletown halls once a month, so my staff will follow up with you directly or we'll add them into a future teletown hall. So with that, I'd like to introduce our two guest speakers. We have Donna San Miguel, the Executive Director for Recruitment and Outreach at Cal State University San Marcos in our own backyard, as well as Edwin Chikwe. I hope I said that correctly, Eddie. You could please correct me if I'm wrong. Who's the Associate Governmental Program Analyst with the California Student Aid Commission, Cash for College Outreach Coordinator. And so with that, I'd like to turn it to Donna and Eddie to ask my guests to introduce themselves and your opening remarks, as well as tell us a little bit about the work you do and speak to how your role has shifted during the COVID pandemic and how that has affected the college application process. So we'll start with you, Donna, and then go to Eddie.
Sure. Thank you so much, Assemblymember Berner, for having me on your podcast today. I'm very excited to be here. So I have been with Cal State San Marcos for about 14 years now in different capacities, but most recently as the Executive Director for Recruitment and Outreach. And yes, definitely the pandemic has just changed everything in, you know, just everything that we do with students, our work with them, our support for students. But luckily we've been able to transition to continuing providing support virtually, and that's what's exciting about what we've been able to do during this time frame. In terms of our application process, I'm excited to report that we have extended our deadline. So our original deadline was going to be tomorrow, December 4th, but we just received word from our chancellor's office that we will be extending through December 15th. So that doesn't mean, you know, everybody wait till the 15th. They just have a little bit more time to fill out their application. And let's see, the application process, the students would complete the application on CSU Apply, and they would submit their information on there, including what coursework they've completed. And then we would start processing shortly after we receive it.
Okay, thanks, Donna. Eddie, we could go over to you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Assembly Member. My name is Edwin Chikwe, so that's how you say it, Chikwe. But yeah, don't worry, it's a complicated one, so people do often get it wrong. But yeah, I go by Eddie, and I'm the Cash for College Alice at the California Student Aid Commission. Just to highlight a couple of things, as mentioned earlier, COVID is definitely affecting the way we do our work. Typically, around this time, we'd be going out doing Castro College workshops, helping students and families complete the FAFSA and the CADA, California GMAT application. And now we have to do everything virtually, which is a whole different mission. But we're still doing it because, you know, the numbers just show us that enough students are not applying. FAFSA completions are down across the country. And it's sad considering that even in the normal FAFSA year, over $2 billion is left on the table. And in California, I believe in 2018, we had about $300 million left on the table. So there's so much money being left on the table. And our goal at CSAC, the California Student Aid Commission, is just to make sure that students and families are not counting themselves out. Just apply. Just apply. And if you are going to apply, apply early. You know, there's that March 2nd deadline. There's a fun statistic which says students who apply early get twice as much aid as those who don't. So in the first 3 months of the FAFSA opening, October, November, December. So just throwing that out there, if you don't get it, the offer for me today, just remember, apply early, apply. You don't know what you're missing out on up until you apply.
That's great. So apply early, apply often, apply early is what I heard. So thank you, Eddie. I really appreciate that. So normally we go a little bit back and forth on our telecon halls, but today, because our experts have two different issuers, I'm going to start out with you, Donna, and we're going to go through some common admissions questions that we get from the district. So could you start us out at the beginning and walk us through the application process? So say I'm a student, my parents didn't go to college, what should I expect from my high school counselors to the point at which I apply, to the point I get admitted? What does that look like?
Definitely. So one of the things that we've done to transition virtually is we've been holding workshops. We've been holding one-on-one appointments with anybody who needs help with their application. So for anyone out there listening, if you get stuck on something, please reach out. Pretty much all 23 campuses within the CSU system, we have 23 campuses. Cal State San Marcos happens to just be one of them. But we are all doing virtual events to try to support students and make sure that they fill out the application correctly. And so in order to start the application, you would want to go on to CSU Apply. And for first-time freshmen, what we're looking for that students have completed is the A through G requirements, which include history and social sciences, English, math, laboratory science, language other than English, visual arts and performing arts, and a college prep elective. And then if you have college courses that you've also completed along the way while you're in high school, you would also want to get that information because you're going to be entering all of this into your application. And so you would want to go and collect your unofficial transcripts. Test scores, if you have taken your test scores. Now, for this application cycle, we are not taking into consideration the test scores for SAT and ACT in for admissions purposes. We are taking them into consideration for placement purposes into your math courses or your English courses, but they won't be factored into your admissions, which is really good, especially since with the pandemic, students haven't necessarily had access to that. You'll need your social security number if you have one, your citizenship status. But if you don't have citizenship status, that's okay. You can still fill out the application. And there's other documentation that you would fill out, which is AB 540, so that we can get you in-state tuition. You'd also want to get a form of payment. There is a fee for the application. When you're filling it out, there is a way to there's a series of questions. Based on how you answer those questions, it automatically determines if you qualify for an application fee waiver. So if you do, you don't have to enter the payment. You can get up to 3 application fee waivers for the CSU system. So 3 different of the institutions through the CSU system if you're applying to multiple campuses. You'd also want to know your parents' citizenship status, their annual income, employment background, and then if you're planning on applying for the Educational Opportunity Program, then you'd also want letters of recommendation, and we can, you know, talk about that a little bit later. And then if you have a California statewide student ID, that number helps and it makes it easier for you to enter your coursework into the actual application. So this is all the information you would want to gather when you start filling out your application for Cal State. And so the website that you would want to go to is calstate.edu/apply. And on that, once you get there, you would select the term that you're applying for, which would be fall 2021. And then that's when your application would start. You would create your account using an email address. Make sure you use your personal email address because we will start corresponding with you at that email address. And then you have to create a password. Make sure you remember your password. Write it down someplace safe or keep it someplace safe. A lot of students forget the password and then they can't go back in. And one of the things that it requests on the password is one of the criteria is a special character. So an exclamation point or an at symbol or the star symbol, something other than the number or a letter. So make sure you take note of that and you include it in your password. And so for first-time students, you will be considered seeking a first bachelor's degree and indicate that you will be graduating high school because at the time when you come in, you will be done with your high school graduation education. And then if you have any, like I mentioned before, community college courses that you've taken while you're in high school, you also want to include that in your application. And there's a specific question that you would answer yes to, that you've taken those courses. And then you would start filling out the information. So the first thing is to select your program. And I think this is the most important thing when you're deciding what type of institution to go to, is looking at the programs that everyone has to offer. Unfortunately, every school cannot offer every single program. So really looking at what it is that your end goal is going to be once you graduate, that way you can align your education with that. So what profession, what career are you hoping to go into? And then that can kind of give you some direction. Then you would select the program and you would select the campus. So Cal State San Marcos, for example, for us. And then it's split up into four sections: personal information, academic history, supporting information, and program materials. And so you have to go through each one of those quadrants, fill it out in order for your application to be complete. And you'll be able to you'll be able to track the progress on the screen because it starts to become green as you fill out each section within the application. And so personal information, as you expect, is name, address, and everything that's personal to you. Academic history, where you're going to enter your coursework for your high school classes or your community college. Supporting information is where you're going to be, so the educational program, if you've been part of any of them, so like AVID, Upward Bound, Talent Search, Puente, Independent Living Project, MESA Projects, so there's just a list of different things that you can add to that as well as work experience. And for students that are listening that aren't yet ready to transition to college, we have an Upward Bound program and a Talent Search program with Oceanside Unified School District. So definitely check it out. We have counselors there who support you through the process and make sure that you're college ready. So if you have questions about that, you can definitely reach out to my office and we can help connect you with our advisors. And then the last part, which is a supplemental or the program materials, which really depend on the major that you're selecting. Some of them are going to require you to submit additional information, maybe an essay, maybe some volunteer, maybe some letters of recommendation. It just depends on the program. For our programs, we generally don't have too much of the requirements for programs. And so then you'd want to make sure that you review your entire application before you submit it. And then once you submit it, you'll get a confirmation, and then that's what will start the process for applying to the CSU system. I know that was kind of quick.
Thank you. That was very comprehensive. So I think, but you took us like clearly, I think, through each of the different steps. How can you get help? You know, what are the requirements? I think that's super helpful. So one of our folks asked, nearly 25% of high school students are considered middle class, indicated they were not planning to attend college because of the expense. Could you explain what else might hinder students from applying successfully to college? Especially now when you think, you know, I think you made clear, I think it was really important. I've been telling my friends, kids this, that, you know, most colleges are not considering the SAT and the ACT at all in their admissions process because it would not be a fair indicator because so many people couldn't take it. So I think you made, you know, that clear. But other than cost, what do you think is a hindrance of kids from deciding to go to college?
I think students tend to get overwhelmed by the options, to be quite honest. There are so many schools, even within the CSU system, there's 23 of us, and we all have different majors, different career paths that everybody can select from. So I think it's, you know, students start to look at everything. And I think they should really focus on a couple different areas as they're trying to select what type of institution they want to go to, what fits their needs. The biggest one is obviously career path. What is it that they want to go to? And that will narrow down which campus to go to. For example, we just got our new software and electrical engineering program. People were asking and dying for engineering programs, so we're really excited to be able to offer that at Cal State San Marcos. And so if students are looking for those types of degrees, not everyone has them, so you want to make sure you're looking at that. And then selecting something that's going to be a good fit. So do students want to go to a large campus or a smaller campus? Cal State San Marcos is really known for the small classroom sizes and being able to build those relationships with faculty. So if that's something that sounds appealing to students, then that might be one way to go. The biggest thing is the financial burden, which I know my colleague Edwin will talk more about. But, you know, there's tons of scholarships and financial aid, like he mentioned. We have our general scholarship application. It's open right now. The federal application for federal student aid is available right now. And so in addition to getting aid from the state, so students have tons of opportunity to get that financial aid. It's not just, you know, filling out the FAFSA, but there's scholarships and other grants that they can qualify for. And then I think the application used to be a little bit more complex or just had so many questions, and so it kind of overwhelmed students. I think the CSU system has done a great job at consolidating some of those questions and what we were really trying to get at, the information that we actually need. So they got rid of a lot of things that we don't need, and that's why we have the four quadrants to make it easier for students to understand, to go through and fill out each section. And then they can clearly see when they see on the website that they've completed each different quadrant. And that's helpful because then they know that they're doing it correctly because it turns green. And then I think students may be unsure right now with the pandemic in terms of things that are going on. Right now we are virtual, so all of our courses are offered in a virtual format or a hybrid format. I think we have about 2,000 students that are taking classes in person at Cal State San Marcos right now, and those were exceptions that we had to ask for from the chancellor's office, and they're primarily for labs. So for students in the sciences, in nursing, for example, some of those things are very difficult to do virtually. So we've gotten exception to offer those in person. So those classes are kind of hybrid to help support the students learn and gain the skills that they need to go into those professions. And there's tons of safety that our safety, health, and sustainability folks have put into play. So there's there's, you know, the plexiglass and there's the separation, smaller classes and things like that. But I think those would be the main reasons why maybe somebody might not want to or may not continue or fill out their application or think about higher ed. But I think right now is actually a great time to really apply and go to school because there's not really a whole lot that we can do. You know, a lot of the different places, unfortunately, have limited operations. And it's just, you know, we need to take extra precautions. And with the social distancing, you can do school from home. And you're still learning and moving forward towards your goals. So that's just kind of one of my own personal mottos. Like, well, there's nothing else I can do. I might as well go to school. So that's just my point of view.
Thanks, Donna. Eddie, I think you could chime in. What do you think, 25% of students who consider themselves middle class are choosing and opting not to go to college?
Honestly, and I think it's understandable. I can definitely speak at least on the cost aspect. We know that money is a hindrance. But specifically for middle class students, I mean, we have the middle class scholarship here in California, which is a scholarship that can cover anywhere from 10 to 40% of tuition. So that's, and I believe that's mainly used by the UCN and CSUs, but that's an opportunity where you won't know that unless you apply for financial aid, unless you fill out the FAFSA, unless you fill out the California Dream Act. So that's why you're going to keep on hearing me say this over and over again, apply, apply, apply. There's so many different scholarships, and not just from the state, not just from the federal government, but even from the institutions themselves. Institutions have a lot of different ways of giving students money. So apply, and I understand that there's this notion that they feel like college expenses, that they're going to have to take a lot of debt, which does happen in some cases, but you don't know up until you actually know what you're being offered. So apply.
I think we heard again, FAFSA, apply, apply, apply. So what I'm hearing from Donna is this is a great time to apply. Your SATs will not be counted. And I'm not going to look at that in the evaluation. But Donna, what about your last semester in high school? And with that, I'd ask you to answer, you know, one of the things that, you know, when we went to the stay-at-home order in the spring, all the classes were, a lot of them were pass-fail. How are you evaluating admissions at CSU San Marcos when there was pass-fail this spring? And what about this, like, the final semester? Does that even count? How does that all work together?
Sure. So, yes, we definitely understand that, you know, that there have been extenuating circumstances this year, as maybe there have been in other years, you know, just different things that people have been facing. You know, we deal with the fires here in California, so that could also impact a student's academic standing. And so basically for students who have received pass or fail grades, as long as they have passed the courses, we are taking that as credit for completion of that requirement. Now that won't count into the GPA because it doesn't have a GPA attached to it, but the requirements are completed. So that's a good thing that the students won't have to retake that course or kind of figure out how to meet that requirement. As long as it's passing, we will go ahead and take that into consideration. Now, we always encourage students to continue doing well in school because you want to continue working towards your GPA. So if your schools have switched back to regular grading, you're going to want to do really well this last semester during your senior year so that we can count that information for your final application. And then that also comes into play for some scholarships. So you want to make sure you do well in all of your classes because they'll be able to count that to determine eligibility. For some of that criteria for scholarship.
Thanks. So that's super helpful. So we have to know that they're going to get credit for those classes in the spring. And when the classes are not pass-fail now, they should try their best because that does count towards their GPA, and they shouldn't slack off in their last semester. Is that a good summary, Donna, of what you said?
That's a great summary.
There yes. You go. So... So from your expert experiences, how do you think students should go about choosing a school they may want to apply to if they have they're undecided about your major? You spoke earlier about thinking about what you want to go into, what colleges offer what options, but if they're undecided, how should folks go about choosing which college to apply to?
Well, I think, you know, it depends on what it is that they're looking for in a college experience. And I kind of mentioned this a little bit earlier, you know, are they looking for a huge college experience or do they want a smaller class size environment? Do they want to experience specific things within student life? Now, of course, student life right now looks a little bit different because of COVID, but we still have different activities that are virtual. All of our student centers are hosting virtual events for all of our students to engage. So that's been really nice to see, and it's been helping students connect and not be so isolated at home. So that's been beneficial for our students, but, you know, it just really depends what type of experience they're looking for. Cal State San Marcos, we are NCAA. We have basketball. We have soccer. We have golf. We have volleyball, track and field. So there's tons of opportunities to go to sporting events. And then we also have a great visual performing arts day. We have our arts and lecture series, so there's a lot of intimate productions that are put on across the academic school year. And then we also have over 140 student organizations. And most universities will have student organizations. We have Greek Life. And so there's lots of ways for students to get involved. We have our career center and our internship, which also offers internships, and that helps students explore kind of what type of field or career they may want to go into. So I think that's especially important, kind of investigating what type of opportunities students will be able to have access to be able to figure out what major to select if they are undecided. When I went to school, I was definitely undecided. I had no idea what I wanted to major in. And I must have changed my major at least three different times before I finally settled on my last one. So, you know, it's okay to change, but there's lots of ways to kind of figure that out. I know our Career Center offers a lot of personality assessment tests once the applicants become students, then they can take some of those tests free of charge because there are students and kind of try to figure out what path would be good for them. So there's lots of opportunities.
And I think that's really good. I don't know if you, most people know this about me. I actually started at UC Berkeley in astrophysics, and I really was bad at astrophysics. And so ended up finishing in political science. So, you know, I think for me, I know it was one of my things of when I went to college, I wanted to have a university that had a very different interest. So I wanted to go to a place that had different options in case, you know, astrophysics didn't work out for me, which it did not. So I think that's a great way to start. I do have some questions about high school students and the pandemic. I think you answered most of them. But one thing that I know I've been asked and I didn't know how to answer is you said for CSU San Marcos, you're not evaluating SAT and ACT at all. So even if somebody had taken like a prep SAT in ninth grade, but and they meant to retake it in the spring in 11th grade, that's just not going to be something you evaluate on, correct?
Correct. We were not going to take that into consideration for admissions purposes at all.
And I think that's really important for you high schoolers out there who are worried about this. You've worked really hard to get to this place. Do not think because of COVID that admissions officers and admissions officials aren't thinking that you've had it hard. Your generations had to do something harder than most other generations before you. Everybody sees that, and I think our, you know, every college admissions person I've talked to has echoed what Donna has said, which is they're going to look at what you've done during this time. They're going to understand that it was pass-fail in the spring. They're going to understand that if you took SAT in ninth grade, they're not going to hold you that against you when you're in 12th grade and applying to college. It's all going to work out. So apply to a wide range of schools. Apply for those scholarships. And before, you know, I just want to do a time check. We're about 4:30, so I want to move on to a couple questions about financing college because I know that is a very big issue. I know when I went to Berkeley, one of the reasons I chose Berkeley is I could work my way to school and pay for tuition. But back then, I think I paid, I want to say I paid $800 a semester tuition at Berkeley, and I think that's like a fraction of what it is now. And so it's not always an option for students to work their way through college. So, Eddie, why don't you take us through the many ways that you could pay through college, including grants, loans. Can you walk us through, like, we did here, always fill out your FAFSA, because if you don't fill it out, there's no place to start. So beyond that, what other options are out there? If I'm not wealthy, if I'm middle class, how am I going to pay for college?
Well, so, yeah, look, there's a bunch of different scholarship opportunities. The first place you definitely want to look at is the college, obviously. They tend to have institutional grants, which they give to different students. So you always want to make sure that you're checking in with the college to see what options they do have for those institutional grants. And then students should also look outside the colleges and also look at all of these different scholarship services. You know, what we find in financial aid is a lot of times students just don't apply for scholarships. And it's really a sad shame because there's just so much money that does not get used that gets left on the table. But to begin with, to kind of know how much money you need, we obviously always will recommend starting with the FAFSA, because with the FAFSA, you have the Pell Grant, which is a federal option. The matching get up out there is about $6,345 a year. And then if you qualify, you could potentially, in the state level, you can get a Cal Grant, which is a tuition-paying grant. And then, yeah, that would, if you get those two grants, that's about, anyway, if you go to a UC, that could be $18,000, roughly, a year, just money, just for filling out an application, right? And so there's different opportunities. We recommend doing that. I also do want to speak to the fact that for undocumented students, you know, filling out the California Dream Act application, undocumented students, obviously, they can't get federal aid for because they're undocumented and because of their citizenship status. But the state of California does provide different kinds of aid, such as the Cal Grant and other types of loans and subsidized loans for undocumented students, so the dream loan. So once again, I'm going to keep on emphasizing this, telling students and families, please apply and apply early, because you just don't know what you need. You don't know how much money you're going to get, and you have all this money that's being there on the table that if you don't apply, you're just leaving.
Yes, and we never want to leave money on the table, right?
Absolutely not.
That's not what we do. So we've talked about this word FAFSA. I remember FAFSA from when I applied to college. But if you're listening to this, you might be like, what is that FAFSA thing they keep talking about? That's the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. And Eddie, can you take us through like these common things that we talk about? FAFSA, a Pell Grant, the California Dream Act application. What are those three things, and who's eligible for what program?
Gotcha, awesome. So let's start with kind of what is the FAFSA. So like you mentioned, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. The FAFSA is an application where a student will go in there, put in their information, and then sometimes they'll be asked to also put in their parent information. More often than not, they'll also have to put in parent information. And from that application, the federal government will be able to determine what they believe that family, that household can contribute to the student's education. So that's your expected family contribution. And from there, if it's low, depending on where your expected family contribution is, you can get a combination of different types of grants. At the federal level, you can get the Pell Grant, which is a really nice grant. It's about $6,345 a year. It can be actually be used for 6 years. So, and you can use some of that eligibility over summer. So if you're trying to get out and trying to accelerate your way out of school, you can use some of your federal aid for summer. And, yeah, that's pretty much what the Pell Grant is. It can go to covering tuition. It can go to covering a bunch of different things, textbooks, housing, but that's pretty much a Pell Grant. It's a grant from the federal government, and you don't have to pay it back. So that's the FAFSA. Now, the FAFSA also, you can also get used at the state level. And the people who are eligible for the FAFSA are citizens and green card holders, or permanent residents. So you have to have some.
Eddie, you said eligible for the FAFSA or eligible for the California Dream Act application?
For the FAFSA, yeah. So
okay.
Citizens and green card holders are the ones who are eligible for the FAFSA. Citizens, green card holders, yeah, permanent residents, they're eligible for the FAFSA. And it also doesn't just it also allows you to get state aid. So once again, we talked about the middle class scholarship. That's a state grant. We talked about the Cal grant, which is a tuition paying grant, literally covers tuition at public universities. So you wouldn't have to even worry about tuition, and you can use, if you got the Cal grant and the Pell grant, you could use the Cal grant to cover your tuition and the Pell grant for other things. So that's the FAFSA in a nutshell. It's federal. Citizens and green card holders are the ones who are eligible for it. And, yeah, it allows you to get federal and state aid. On the other hand, we have the California Dream Act application. Now, the first thing we always wanted to spell about the California Dream Act application is you do not have to be a DACA recipient to get the California Dream Act application. I know it's a little confusing that it has the words Dream Act in it, but if you're undocumented, if you have TPS status, if you're not a citizen and you're not a green card holder, you can apply for the California Dream Act. Now, it does have its own set of eligibility requirements. And to put it simply, those eligibility requirements are, did you attend a California high school, adult school, elementary school for up to 3 years? And to meet that 3-year requirement, you can use 2 years of community college, or you can use any amount of years at a high school, adult school, or elementary school. And so as long as you meet those 3 years, you can apply for the California Dream Act. What kind of aid will you get? You will get the Cal Grant. You'll be eligible to get the Cal Grant. You'll be eligible to get the Dream Loans. And, yeah, you'll be eligible to pay in-state tuition in California, which is a really big deal. So that's just a really quick breakdown of the FAFSA and the California Dream Act, the CADA. And, yeah, we always like to say them in conjunction because we want everybody to know that regardless of your status, there's still opportunities to get federal and state financial aid. Actually, state financial aid just for the California Dream Act and federal for the FAFSA. Yeah,
that's a lot of stuff. So what I'm going to take away with it is there are basically funding sources for college for everybody from every background. It's just about applying and make sure you're applying so that you are eligible, because if you don't ask for it, you're not going to get it.
Exactly, yeah. That's a great way to summarize it.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I tell my kids all the time. And then they ask for lots of things. So I'm not sure that's great parenting, but, you know, it's what we do. What are your best tips for applying for financial aid by FAFSA? And maybe with that you could cover what are some common mistakes, like how can those mistakes be avoided? You know, what's going on? I know when I first applied, I was so overwhelmed because they're asking questions. I, as an 17-year-old, never even thought about, like, how much my parents made. I had no idea. I never looked at the taxes. So what are your tips for applying for FAFSA? What are common mistakes people make, and how can those mistakes be avoided?
You know, I'm so glad you brought up the example of you didn't know what your parents made, because that's a lot of students. They have no idea what their parents made. They have no idea what their parents' birthday is or any of that information, and that's okay. And so that's why the biggest thing we would recommend is if you're a student, fill it out with your parents. Fill it out with your parents, because we have parents who try to fill it out for their students. We have students who try and guess what their parents' information is, and it just creates this whole mess, because the most common error we see actually is really demographic information and putting things in the wrong place. So a student will put the wrong birthday for their parents, or the parent will put the wrong birthday for their student, or the student won't spell out their full name as it is on their social security number, or if they don't have social security number, which is our undocumented students, they won't spell it out as it is on their school ID, their high school ID. So it's really little errors like that that really can slow down the whole process. So that's why we recommend that if your parent is available, fill it out with your parent while they're there so that both of you can put in the information and answer questions that apply to you. We always recommend also just having, for the parents at least, have your tax information ready, have that ready to go. And a simpler way is, if you can, using the IRS data retrieval tool. That saves so much time, because then you don't have to fill out all that tax information manually from your 1040s. So if you, and this is only available for those who filed the FAFSA, though, the IRS data retrieval tool. Unfortunately, those who filed the CADA would have to put in that tax information manually. But, yeah, those are, I'll say, are my big recommendations. Fill it out with a parent. If a parent's unavailable,
which is the case with some students, what we recommend then is still fill out all the portions that you can, and you can just click the FAFSA will allow you to say, I'm unable to put in my parents' information. And then what you can then go and do is go and explain to the college why, and then maybe they can do something to make sure that your parents' information doesn't need to be included, and they have the power to do that. But more often than not, we recommend students and parents pick some time, sit down together, get those tax information out, and just apply together. Don't try and do it for each other, because that's when mistakes happen.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good. So that's some very good tips there. Just like I asked Donna, we know things have changed with COVID-19 pandemic. How have the deadlines for FAFSA and student aid changed with the COVID-19 pandemic?
So the deadlines-wise, I mean, we still have that March 2nd priority deadline, and that deadline is super critical because it really allows you to get priority eligibility, because after March 2nd, it's now first come, first served, right? So before March 2nd, it's priority. So that's still sort of staying, that's still staying the same. Where we might see some changes and a lot more lax is in things around selective service, especially for our California Dream Act filers, the males. So for the FAFSA filers, you don't have to worry too much about this. You can do this online. It's rather quick. For the California Dream Act filers, they have to mail it in because they can't do it online because they don't have socials. So the Selective Service has been a little bit more lax about this than usual because, you know, everything's going on with the whole mailing system and mail being delayed. But we still recommend just to cover yourself, just submit it in early, mail it in early. Quick reminder on this specific issue, that can be sent in and that can be done as soon as a male turns 17 years old in 3 months. So the sooner you get to it, the better. But those, I would say, are the main deadlines. But everything, for the most part, is pretty much staying the same with the FAFSA and the California Dream Act.
Okay. That's perfect. That's good to know. I remember when I was 17 filling this stuff out, I was like, what's selective service, Dad? He's like, well, you're a girl, Tasha. You don't have it. So I think it's great to take it through and remind people to do that. When we look, and I think you kind of talked about this when we talked about filling out the FAFSA, but when a student, what's the difference between an independent student and a dependent student, and how is that determined, and how does that relate to the FAFSA and tax information that is included?
Got you. So one of the things I will say right now is a dependent student, to put it simply, a dependent student is a student that when they fill out the FAFSA or the California Dream Act, they have to have their parents' information on it, their parents have to sign it, and if they make any corrections, the parents have to re-sign again. An independent student doesn't need parent information. So that is the simplest differentiation right there. Now, the thing is, most students, more often than not, more students are going to be dependent. And I know a lot of students, because having worked in financial aid, you know, you'll hear students saying, hey, I pay my own bills, I do all these things for myself, my parents will support me financially. I feel like I'm an independent student. And technically, by guidelines, they're not. They have to answer a specific set of questions. And if they answer no to those questions when they're filling out the FAFSA or the California Dream Act, the application will automatically deem them as a dependent student. Now, colleges in special circumstances, such as, sometimes it's just a hostile situation, where the student says, you know, I might have answered no to all those dependency questions, but I really cannot continue communicating with my family. Colleges have the power to override this. So if you're a student and you feel like I need to go in there and override this, then you could get that overrided. So, for example, who would be an independent student? Foster youth students would be considered independent. Those in foster care would be considered independent. Those students who have a child would be considered independent, who have their child who's there, who have a child who they're supporting would be considered independent, things like that. Those are the kinds of students. Students who are serving the military, who serve in the armed forces, considered independent. But those are the kind of circumstances that make a student independent. But more often than not, students are going to be dependent, which means they need their parents' information on their application.
That is super helpful. I remember being 18 and thinking I was really independent, too. That might have resonated. What are some differences between the applications that students and families need to be aware of? You know, I think specifically as we look at DACA to qualify for the California Dream App application. What are some differences that between those applications that students and families might be aware, want to be aware of?
Gotcha. So for the there's eligibility requirements. So who has to apply for which one? You shouldn't apply for both. You should not apply for both. You have to apply for one. And once again, that's really based on your status. And so yeah, citizenship status. So that's the first thing. Fill out one application. Fill out the one that is for you. If students have questions about their status or they really don't know, we recommend calling a group called Immigrants Rising. They're amazing, especially with helping undocumented students figure out which application they should apply for or students who are unsure about their status. So that's a really great group. Or calling the college, because each college has what is called a Dreamer Resource Center, which is some version of that. So that's one thing. Figure out which application you should apply for. That's a big difference. Another difference, another thing I want to say before I put out the other differences, the FAFSA and the California Dream Act structurally are very similar. We at the California Student Aid Commission designed the California Dream Act to very much mirror the FAFSA. So they're very similar. But one of those things is selective service. Selective service, FAFSA filers, like I mentioned earlier, they do it online. California Dream Act filers have to mail the stuff in. Another big thing is for the California Dream Act is just to remember that day one, they do not need DACA to qualify for it. They don't need DACA to qualify for it. As long as they meet those 3 years from either from elementary to high school, find their 3 years of eligibility of being in California at a California high school, elementary school, or community college, and if they can get those 3 years in, then they can apply. But they don't need DACA. I know it's confusing, but you don't need DACA. I want to make that very clear. Let's see. Other things is they don't get federal aid. So California Dream Act suppliers do not get federal aid. They are not eligible for the Pell Grant. And, yeah, that's just something I want to emphasize. And then just going back on the selective service, I do want to be clear. Selective service will not reveal your status to any other government agency. They won't do that. So if you're a California Dream Act supplier, you're eligible, and you're scared that selective service is going to reveal your information, they won't do that. So, yeah, those are some of the differences that do happen. And then for students who they do have citizenship status, but or they have a green card or permanent residency, and their parents are undocumented, something to really keep in mind is that their parents, because their parents are undocumented, will not be able to sign their FAFSA electronically because they don't have a Social Security number. So those parents will have to mail in a signature. To the you can go find it online and it will tell you where to mail in, but those parents will have to mail in. So this is for students who are have eligible status, who are permanent residents or green or citizens, who are filling out the FAFSA, but their parents are undocumented. That's a slight nuance that should be known. But yeah, those are some of the main differences between those who file for the FAFSA, those who file for the California Dream Act.
Thank you. That was super helpful. And again, a COVID-related question. What should folks do if their financial situation on their last taxes is dramatically different now and has changed through COVID?
Gotcha. Great question. One of the and one thing to know for those of you who don't know, once you fill out these applications, once they auto-populate for this next year's. So that's a really great helpful thing, so you don't have to constantly do that. Now, in this situation, COVID-19 has changed, and what's currently on the application doesn't reflect your financial situation. We recommend that you go and you talk to the college as soon as possible. The colleges have the power to do what is called a professional judgment. So they can look at your situation and readjust your financial aid. And so let's say if you had a middle-class student who now all of a sudden parents have been laid off because of COVID, and let's say they now they've dropped a couple of income classes, they could potentially, they can go to the college, tell them their situation, give them the paperwork, the documentation to show that these things happened, and they could qualify for more aid federally and statewide. But colleges have that power. We at CFAC, unfortunately, we don't have that power, so don't call us on that. Go and talk to your college. The college will be able to help you with that situation.
And that's super helpful. So I think that's super great to do this. And, you know, we're approaching a little bit before 5, and I want to make sure we have time for each of you to offer closing remarks. But is there anything, any technical things that you think, you know, from your years of working with student aid applications, like what should somebody listening to this call walk away from other than apply for your FAFSA, the difference between the California Dream Act application and FAFSA. But what should people walk away? Like, what if they make mistakes? Is there anything about submitted application and completed application? What should the people walk away with from this Teletown Hall today? And maybe where can they get more information?
Got it. Okay, so what people should walk away from, and I always say besides applying early, just to emphasize why that's important, especially for students who are thinking out of state, there's a lot of state aid that you can get in California that you won't get if you go out of state. So if you apply early, you actually be able to see what that state aid is. And that always changes a lot. That changes a lot of students' decisions who will consider to go out of state. So that's just one thing. Another thing is for FAFSA filers, make sure that when you put in your name, that it's what's on your Social Security. Don't use a hyphen, don't use a nickname. If you have four names and that's on your Social Security, then put in four names. So make sure that it matches across the board. For California Dream Act filers, make sure that your name matches what your school ID says. So whatever your school ID says, make sure that that's what's going in. Another tip we recommend is when you use emails for these applications, do not use a school email. Reason why is once you leave that institution, that school email could be closed. The school could say, okay, no longer have access to this email for a variety of different reasons. So always use a personal email that you know you're going to have access to for multiple years, because these kinds of applications, if you're going to college, you're most likely going to be filling these things 4, 5, or 6 times. So make sure that you're using an email that you'll have access to for that long. Don't use a school email. And then, once again, constantly check in with colleges. We try to always tell students to be empowered and to create their own accounts to check in to see if the application is moving smoothly. Because sometimes they'll submit and they'll think they're done. And if they don't check their emails, if they don't check for updates, they might miss that something's not happening. The last and final thing I'll talk about is verification. This happens to a lot of students. The federal government will select them for verification. We'll randomly select them for verification. And students will ignore this because they'll say, I submitted my FAFSA. I didn't have to worry about this. The issue with that is in order to complete verification, you need to submit documents, you need to submit tax documents, you need to show that what's on your FAFSA is actually true. And your money cannot be disbursed until this process is completed. So I always say that for students, check your emails, because if you get selected for verification, you want to be in contact with the college as soon as possible, so that by the time fall rolls around, you're getting your aid dispersed, all those things have been ironed out, because sometimes, you know, you can be asked to refile taxes because you filed wrongly the first time. So all these different things can happen. So check your emails, apply early, and make sure that you're putting in the correct information that matches across the system, and make sure that you're not using the school email.
Thank you. That's super helpful. Eddie and Donna, I just so much appreciate that you're here educating folks on what to do. I think there's anyways a lot of uncertainty, obviously, with applying for college, how I'm going to pay for it, and then add COVID-19 on top of it, and that just increases it. So I want to thank you for providing an overview, your tips and resources for our college-bound students and their families listening today. I know that there will be additional questions that students will have on their progress through this application. But I'd like to give our speakers a time, maybe 1 to 2 minutes each, for any final comments that you'd like our listeners to take away from your discussion. I'll start with Eddie, and then we can go to Donna.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And first of all, I'd just like to say thank you so much to Assemblymember Tasha for having me here. I really appreciate you hosting these things and educating people. In my closing remarks, I would just like to say there's a lot of things I know many of you might have questions about. So if you still have those questions, please feel free to visit our website, CSAC, so CSAC.ca.gov. We have a ton of great resources. We actually now have what are called, Cash for College workshops, and this is where a person who is trained on these applications will help you and your family fill out this application. So check those out there on our website. We also have, at CSEC, we lead what are called statewide Cash for College webinars, where we're really going across the state using the webinars and everything to, once again, walk students and families through these applications. So that's all on our webpage. Please check it out. And, yeah, I hope you all have a great day. And, once again, apply. Apply now. Do it, please.
Thank you, Eddie. Donna, go to you, and then we'll close on out.
Sure. Well, thank you, Assemblymember Berner, for having me and allowing me to share information about just applying for Cal State, for school, but specifically about Cal State San Marcos. And, you know, one thing that I want to make sure that the audience knows is that we're here for them. We're here to support them through this process. We want to help them succeed. I know that I speak for my entire colleagues within the higher education system, whether that's our local community college at MiraCosta, Palomar, that we're all committed to success. So wherever you decide to go, there is help for you, so definitely reach out. My office is hosting appointments today and tomorrow, and then we'll have another workshop probably next week. So if students are having difficulty with their application, we are happy to help them navigate that and happy to help them make sure that they complete it and send it in. And then don't forget about the scholarship. So everybody has general scholarship application or some sort of similar application. Ours is available through our scholar or financial aid and scholarship office. So I would encourage everyone to fill it out. And I think a common misconception, too, that people don't realize is right now is the application period for next fall. So this is August 2021. A lot of people think, oh, well, that's way early. Yes, it is early because we need some time to process your application. And I've encountered a lot of students that don't realize that. So make sure that you're applying now so that we can consider you for admissions for fall 2021. And we're excited to have you. So we hope to see you fall 2021. Thank you.
I want to thank everybody. Thank you for our really informed discussion today. My office is always here to assist and welcome your questions, comments, and concerns. My goal is always to provide the highest quality in public service on state-related matters, and I know we're all more informed on how to apply for college. If you have any questions that maybe you think of later, maybe you would need some help, I would encourage you to reach out to my team. You can call my office at 760-434-7605, or you can reach out to my staff. My district director is Janet Chen. Her email is Janet, J-A-N-E-T, dot Chen, C-H-I-N, at asm.ca.gov, or my field representative, Alex Kiwan, that's A-L-E-X dot Kiwan, K-I-W-A-N, at asm.ca.gov. And any links or in any resources mentioned today, including what Eddie mentioned at the cash, the number four, college.csac.ca.gov, any of these resources will be available, as well as this recording on my website at ad76.asmdc.org. Thank you again. The COVID rates are really high, folks. Please wear your mask. Stay 6 feet apart from other people. Try not to gather with people outside of your family and your household unit. And stay safe, North County. And apply for college and the financial aid. Take care. Bye.